As some of you know, 2 months ago today, I was in an action at the border organized by the American Friends Service Committee. It was specifically organized to be a witness by clergy, although there were many lay people of faith as well. This is an organization that I've worked with in the past and honor very much for their long heritage of leading the way, as Quakers do in so many ways, to help people be moral witnesses in our communities. And when I went, I brought your good wishes for the people seeking to cross with me on this stole, which many, many of you wrote on, drew on, wrote lovely messages in English and Spanish. And since we were asked to wear clergy garb if we were clergy, wear collars or stoles or robes or something that would signify that we were there in that capacity, this is what I was wearing. So we gathered at the American Friends Service Committee, a building near the border, and I could right away see as we were all milling around in this courtyard getting organized that there were a lot of UUs there. I think there were, judging from how we filled the buses, there were 300 or 400 people all together, about 75 of whom were prepared to do civil disobedience. I wasn't among those. I couldn't get there in time to do the training. And the rest of us there as witnesses. And a good 60 to 75 of us were UUs. Great to see people, including from all over the country, and our Unitarian Universalist Association president, Susan Frederick Gray. We gathered together, people were putting together signs, were giving out symbols. There were these lovely signs. I was holding one for a while, and somebody said it was like a long pole with a black silhouette of a bird up on top. And somebody said to me, "Nice dove." So I bit my tongue, and because I'm pedantic sometimes and didn't want to be. But it wasn't a dove, as lovely as that symbol would have been. It was a swallow, which I found even more symbolic, because as a whole crowd of people walked together holding these swallows when we approached the border, and I'm sure I was not the only person aware that the swallow's return to Capistrano here in California is celebrated and honored every year. And these birds can move freely across what we have drawn a line there as being a border between us, a wall between us. But we don't allow the people to do that. We gathered, we got onto our buses and traveled the short distance to the park near in San Ysidro that abuts the border with Mexico. I've traveled across this border various times, but always in the air. And the only national border I think I had ever seen before, I realized, was various ones between the US and Canada. I was particularly thinking of a visit I made to the International Peace Garden in the Midwest on the border with Canada, and how different that was. So we gathered, we had a press conference and said some prayers, and then they tried to get us to walk 4 abreast, the whole walk of about 1.5 miles. Good luck with that. Let me tell you, clergy complain that leading a congregation is like herding cats. Just try to herd clergy. So we walked along, getting to know each other, and talking, sometimes somber, sometimes singing, sometimes chatting and introducing each other to new people. About 1.5 miles to the beach and to the border itself. And without even intending to, I immediately fell into what felt like a spiritual practice. It was a pilgrimage, and every step felt meaningful. I just could not help it as I began the walk toward the border, imagining what it would be like to be approaching it from the other side. Not a couple of miles along the beach, but the last couple of miles of hundreds or 1,000, each step taking me farther and farther from my home and what I knew. Not walking after a good night's sleep in a hotel, but after weeks of a different, uncomfortable, unknown spot every night. Not with friends and colleagues, but with my child gripping my hand, not knowing what kind of welcome that we would get, whether it would all be for nothing, this long, arduous, dangerous, frightening journey, wondering whether what awaited us could possibly be worse than what we were fleeing. If we had thought so, we would not have come. Now, I myself had very different experience approaching this border, even knowing that armed people would be there and on alert. Goodness knows the police are not always protecting our rights, nor the army, as they should. But especially in my position as somebody doing accompaniment, not being arrested, I was not the slightest bit afraid approaching that border. There was no reason for me to be. What would it have been like had I been coming from the other direction? So we walked along the beach. It was strange. It was a beach walk, a lovely beach in California. I wanted to show the people there who had never been to California, look, those are pelicans. Have you ever seen them flying? Aren't they amazing? And let them just enjoy the walk. And yet there was this strange contrast of walking along the beach and heading to this confrontation. We hoped that we would form a semicircle when we got to the border, and others on the other side would complete the circle. And together we would pray, sing, have a brief ceremony, and go back. As we got close to the actual border, we could see how the wall built by human beings to separate one from another, extended right into the Pacific Ocean with its chain link fence and then looped razor wire on top. And out, farther out than anybody could possibly swim, around the end of the wall, a boat that bobbed there the entire time. I couldn't see the symbols on it, but it was clear from its stillness there that it wasn't fishing. It must have been the Coast Guard working for the Border Patrol. And then the ocean just kept coming in, and the tides came in, and the birds flew where they wanted to fly, and there was this ugly thing between us. So we came up as close as we could get. About 20 meters out from the wall, the Border Patrol stopped us. And those who were prepared to be arrested began their face-off there. The rest of us had promised, since we were not engaged in civil disobedience, that we would obey the dictates of any authority, anybody who asked us to do anything, from the state police to the state parks to the Federal Border Patrol, we would obey. So they asked us to stand farther back, and we formed a sort of large crowd of semicircle that sang and danced and watched what was going on. One song sticks with me. There was an English version of it with different words, but I'll tell you the English words of the translation of how it went in Spanish. We sang it in Spanish, and it meant, "Listen, listen, my people, we bring strength. The only flag is freedom. Freedom is the only flag. Oye, mi gente, traemos la fuerza. La libertad es la única bandera." And then we sang a version in English over and over, a prayer of our own. Meanwhile, the people actually lined up in fours were holding tight, facing off with the people who were there to prevent them. And gradually, as we learned later, they began to press, despite being told you can't go any farther, and were arrested, ones, twos, and threes. And we watched each of them, made sure that they were tracked. While all this was happening, the ocean to our right, just off to our left, was Friendship Park, the little sort of no person's land where people are usually welcome to meet relatives. Tijuana and San Isidro can mix a little bit. None of that was happening in the heightened tension and the actions of the administration to keep the border very, very tight. Everybody was just there to keep us from getting any closer. After this had been going on for a while, we did get one of those commands to leave. the state parks got on the bullhorn and said we needed to disperse. And so, having promised not to do civil disobedience without the training, most of us turned and walked back. I learned more about those who remained later, including my roommate, who's a minister from up in this area. She did not get arrested. About 25, 30 people did, and one of the last to be arrested was one of the organizers, who it seemed to her the Border Patrol had particularly identified and picked out. In fact, he was the only person not released within a couple of hours. He was charged with actions that it was clear from multiple videos he had not committed, and took a couple of days to be released. So we had a few days to stay there at the border, she and I and various other of ours. So the next day we went to Tijuana to find out more about how the situation looked from their point of view. There's a fair amount of social justice tourism that I'm wary of. I didn't want to go and just be a tourist. I didn't want to go and do anything that would be unhelpful. But there are people there who lead these tours of the centers that they'll drive you around to the centers where people wait, as people have been waiting in Tijuana for a long time before this caravan brought any more people from outside of Mexico. Lots of people come up from other parts of Mexico to wait there in hopes of getting into the United States. And the person leading us, who's associated with Unitarian Universalists who live in Tijuana and do this work, was really clear on the distinction. I asked him at one point as he was driving us around to places if there was anything we could do. Could we bring food to some of these centers, prepare sandwiches or something, which I know they do sometimes. And he said, well, we can't do that today because I won't do it unless I've got enough food for everybody. And he said, you know, there can be 400 people at one of these shelters, and if we show up with sandwiches for 20, it's really upsetting for everybody. And I really appreciated that. He only wanted us to help in ways that were really helpful. He said, come on down for one of our weekends, and we'll really do things that are useful to people. Right now, this is what people want, is for you to see things. So we saw some of the centers where people wait, some very close to the border. We met a woman with her very young daughter who was close to having her number called. That's what they do. They go down to the border, find out the numbers for the day, and go on back. If your number is far out enough, you know you don't have to walk down. Once it gets close, as hers was, you need to go each day just in case your number comes. And she would go with her little girl and everything they wanted to bring with them. Because if their number was called, they wouldn't be able to come back to the shelter. They were going to go that day. Little girl of about 5 years old, I would say, just watching cartoons in a big, it was about this size, I would say, concrete floor, partly roofed, and with little tents, pup tents, all over that people were sleeping in, one family each. In that strange way that humans will make a community anywhere, it felt like a community, but also it felt like waiting, waiting and waiting for they did not know what. With the incredible influx of new people to Tijuana, Tijuana's delicate balance of how to serve the needs of the people who are waiting to hopefully get into the United States had been upset. And in the hopes of providing a safer space, they had turned an old sports arena farther from the border into a place where people could wait. They had been just filling up whole streets and parks. The problem was, although there were some advantages to this for the people waiting, it was so far from the border that they had to take a bus back and forth, not just a city bus, a big bus that was organized to take them. This was not something you could ever walk or do in less than about an hour. So the problems of people trying to get down to hear their number had become extremely complicated. Our guide took us to this center, to the sports arena, and just a moment after we got there, a bus pulled up, and people rushed towards it. This bus was taking people to the border, but also to an action, we were told, that he hadn't known about, concerning the U.S. consulate. He said, you want to go? This is planning in Mexico. We said, of course, we go. Off we went. So he took us to what turned out to be, first, the center for Mexican government's immigration center, where people were sitting, having completed about a 20-day hunger strike. They had not eaten food for that long, in order to protest the actions both of the Mexican government, their own government there, and the U.S. government, which we were told was, up there around the corner. So neither government was abiding by the UN resolutions about civil rights, about human rights that they had signed on to. So I'm there with my friend, with a couple other UU ministers, and we were standing around chatting, this time not in our regalia. A couple people had Side of Love t-shirts, such as you can buy here if you want. A couple had stoles in their pockets. And a woman came up to us who was one of the organizers of the hunger strike from an organization you may know called Cosecha. She said, are you Catholic priests? And we said, no. It became clear somebody there needed a priest. We said, well, there were some people we'd met on the walk the day before. I said, there's some Catholic workers people here. Maybe some of them are priests. If it's a ritual, you might want somebody Catholic. And she said, no, it's nothing like that. It's just we're about to end this hunger strike, and I feel like we should have some kind of ceremony. There should be some kind of ritual. Is that the kind of thing you do? We said, yeah. Yeah, we do that. So she said, okay, I'll get back to you. I'll find out if that's what they want. And we began this walk around the corner, a long walk, and it was hot there, around a busy, almost a highway to the U.S. consulate. A long parade of people, not only the people who had been hunger striking, but many, many others from various places in Mexico, from various places in Central America, and more people like us who were here for this public witness the previous day. I spent most of the walk getting enough Spanish lesson for the whole month with a man I'll call Hector from Honduras. He and I walked and talked as we went up the hill, and I was just asking him about his life and what brought him here and what he was hoping for from this protest. He had left Honduras, he said, because there was no work. And he volunteered to me. He said, people say that I should say to the officials that I need asylum, that I'm a refugee, that there was gang violence threatened against me or something like that. As we heard, of course, people do suffer, as Karen told us about our friends from El Salvador who are marrying here today. He said, that didn't happen to me. There's just no work in Tegucigalpa, and I need work. That's why I'm here. And I'm an honest person. I don't want to lie about this. They tell me that's the only way I'm going to get asylum, but I don't want to lie. And there he was stuck. I didn't know what to tell him. It was probably good advice, but I appreciated his integrity. So we walked along. He hadn't seen his children in several months. He thought he'd probably never see his mother again. And there he had been waiting, in a country that was neither the one he was heading toward nor the one he had fled, just hoping for a better situation, just hoping for work that could support him and possibly his family. Something that vividly affected me was, as we were going up the hill, there was at one point a woman walking just ahead of us, young woman with two children. She looked like she had a child about maybe 4 or 5 on one hand, and she was holding hands with her. And on the other hand, a slightly older girl, maybe 7 or 8, who she wasn't holding her hand because the mom was holding a garbage bag clearly full of stuff, maybe other clothes of theirs. It looked like they were wearing more clothes than they really wanted to, just to avoid carrying them. Both little girls had pretty thick, those puffy parka kind of things on in this quite warm sun. And they were kind of shrugging them off like this, but clearly if they didn't wear them, they'd have to carry them, so they were wearing them. And the little girl toiling up the hill without even holding her mother's hand. I said to her, can I carry your bag for you? And she gave it to me, and then I said something to Hector, probably in not very good Spanish, something like, now her daughter can hold her hand. And she overheard me, and as I said, I'm not sure I said exactly what I meant to say. In any case, the mother understood me as saying that I wanted the little girl to hold my hand. And she started to, the little girl had taken her hand, and she started to nudge her little, like, you know, go hold the nice lady's hand. It was sweet, and it was funny, and I made myself understood. No, she should hold your hand, that's fine. But of all the things I saw on our trip, the razor wire and the birds and the people waiting to cross the border or maybe never be able to cross, this was the moment that really broke my heart. I had done such a simple thing. It was not a heavy bag. I was just doing this little favor for somebody so that a family could hold hands as we all toiled up the hill together. And somehow our relationship was one of such subservience that she felt she owed me something for that. That she felt that her little girl owed it to me to hold a stranger's hand for really this token of a favor. It felt like, without even wanting to, just by being a part of this country, this system, I had somehow assaulted her dignity, and that this family had to meet us as supplicants rather than equals. It was beyond me, either my emotions at that moment or my Spanish, to say to her, "We're sisters. You don't owe me anything. I'm not doing this as anything for any reasons other than my own." We just walked on together. We got to the top, and it was an odd experience being closed out of our own consulate by rows of soldiers. My friend nudged me and said, "You think if we said, you know, we had to use the bathroom in there and flashed our passports, they'd let us in?" I thought, under the circumstances, probably not. And then, after much gathering and more of the leaders speaking to the press, we did have a very brief ritual of breaking bread and saying a few words, mostly to the effect that we were the ones who were being blessed by the courage of the hunger strikers, and everybody giving thanks to them and to the community and to the earth and to God who brought us the bread. So, something one has to ask oneself in such a trip, and you should definitely be asking your minister when you send her, is what is the purpose of doing such a thing? What did we hope to achieve? Those of us who are arrested, those of us who are witnessing. And there are a lot of reasons, I think. One was to witness for ourselves and thus engrave more deeply on our hearts the awareness of the problem. As I said, I don't want to be a tourist. I don't want to spend the money or the carbon doing something that I can read about in the newspaper, I know about, but I'm glad I went. I'm glad I saw it once, and that of all the times I've crossed the border, I really saw what that meant. It's deepened my sense of what is really going on, and I read the newspaper differently now. I think we were there to be a moral voice for our nation and for its leaders, to speak truth to power and speak love in that dark and hopeless place. You know, clergy and faith communities have really taken a tumble from once being assumed to be moral leaders, moral pinnacles even, in our culture. And I think to a large extent that's deserved because of various corruptions and hypocrisies. And to a large extent, it's good, because you don't have to be a faith leader, you don't have to be a member of a faith community to be a good person. Nevertheless, we are still a symbol of moral striving. That's why one of the few times I use my title is when I sign a letter to the editor. And we need to use whatever symbols and whatever power we are given. And so we were saying, we are paying attention. You have said we are moral voices, and your moral voices are telling you this is not acceptable. This is not the way we should be dealing with immigration. This is not the way your preschool teacher told you to behave towards others. Immigration is complicated, and we were not there to debate or resolve everything about American immigration policy. We were just there to say, we know this is broken, and we know many, many better ways to be doing this than we're doing right now. I think we were there to remind ourselves that we are part of a huge movement, and remind others there as well. We were in the majority. People across this country do not want our immigration system to be what it is. They do not want this kind of standoff at the border by great numbers. And interestingly, I had a conversation with Hector about that because he wanted to know kind of what's up with our president and our administration. So it fell upon me, not for the first time, to explain to somebody, he was astonished to find that Trump got a minority of the votes in the presidential election, to explain to somebody how the Electoral College works. He was bewildered and appalled. Raise your hand if you too are bewildered and appalled. But somewhat reassured to know that that there are not only millions of us, but a majority who want to change things. That if he succeeded in coming to the United States, he would receive a welcome. And that was all over this stole, these words of welcome, such as welcome, just as buen coraje, good courage, such as we want you, solidarity and love, so many words saying, you are wanted here. And so we wanted to let them know, not only to remind ourselves that we are part of a movement, but let them know that we welcome them, regardless of what the governments might be doing it now. And finally, I think that what we were saying was expressed in the first hymn we sang. Come and go with me to that land. There will be justice. There will be freedom in the land where I'm bound. And we say those words knowing that that is what they are longing for. People who are fleeing poverty or oppression, as my own ancestors did not long ago, as many of our ancestors did, and found a land of freedom and justice. But also, it's a song for us, that that's a land we haven't found yet. And we are trying to make it and go towards it. And with every step walking along that beach toward that paradoxical wall and fence and sharp, sharp wire, we were saying, come and go with me. That is a land to which we want to go. So may it be.